I was thinking back to the beginning of my being in the church, and initially I had a real rosy picture of what it was going to be like. Well, today I want to talk about mourning. What has that got to do with the Christian life? Because I remember when I started, after finding out about the church, I figured, wow, this is great. This is going to be carefree. I'm going to enjoy carefree Christianity. I mean, I didn't know anybody in the church. There was nobody within hundreds of miles of where I lived in the church, I don't think. And I thought, well, when you're in the church, you get sick, you get anointed, you get well. Boy, that's something. Of course, I never thought to look around, even after I became acquainted with the church, for those 2,000-year-old people who got sick, got anointed, and got well, and probably never died. Well, that's not the truth. We find out differently. You tithe. You tithe and you get rich. Now, some people have interpreted some things that have been said in the church, and they think that's the standard. That's what happens. If I tithe, I'm going to get rich. And I know some people who left the church over that because they tithed. And of course, when you begin to tithe, that's kind of difficult at first. You make some sacrifices sometimes, then almost all the time, sacrifices of various kinds. And they didn't get rich. Oh, they had a car. They always had enough groceries. They had their homes. You know, and we could list blessings, but they had that before. So we don't enjoy carefree Christianity. Of course, a few weeks ago I talked about feel-good religion. And this is not necessarily a feel-good religion. It is when you get to the bottom line. But it seemed like you obey God's law, you live happily ever after. Has that happened to anybody in this room? Now, yeah, hopefully it does make for the good life. We do enjoy certain things because we keep God's law. And as I look back over 50 years since I've been baptized, and I evaluate what I would have done with what I didn't do because of God's law, I think things turned out pretty good. I never got rich, but I am financially comfortable, at least for the time being. But again, we had sometimes, at least I did, this carefree idea of what Christianity is all about. But we do mourn. We do have sadness from time to time. We can turn to Matthew 5 in verse 4, the Beatitudes. Matthew 5, 4. Blessed are they that mourn. You know, blessed means happy. Isn't it great when you mourn? Well, no. It doesn't seem like it for the time being. For they shall be comforted. Eventually, we will find comfort. Well, that's what I want to look at today, is mourning. Some of the things we mourn over. How we can handle mourning. Where does it fit in our life? My wife said, what are you going to speak about today? I said, mourning. She says, how about afternoon or evening? I said, no. M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. But we do mourn. The Greek word for mourn in Matthew is, pentheo, I think. Pentheo. It means to grieve. So certain things cause us to mourn. Of course, one of the things we probably immediately think of is the loss of a member of the family or the loss of a friend. And we can see this in the life of David in 2 Samuel 1 and verse 17. 2 Samuel 1 and verse 17. Now, maybe if you were there at the time, and I think some people figured this, here Saul had died and his son Jonathan. Of course, Jonathan and David were good friends. Saul sought to kill David. Saul was jealous of David. Tried to kill him several times. So what would David's attitude be? Would he be in mourning now that what he could suppose was his enemy was dead? But it says in verse 17 of 2 Samuel 1, and David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and Jonathan his son. Also he bade them to teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher, The beauty of Israel is slain upon the high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, neither fields of offering, for they shall shield, the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though it had not been anointed with oil, as that he had not been anointed with oil. He was the king. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives. And I've noticed that sometimes when famous people die, they may be controversial people, they may be people that people are taking fault with a lot, but it seems once they die, you know, the critics are silent, and then they tend to think well of them, and that's what David did here. And in their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you with scarlet, with other delights, and put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle, O Jonathan? You were slain in the high place. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been unto me. Thy love was wonderful, passing the love of women. They were really good friends. How the mighty have fallen, their weapons of war perished. So here we see the example of David with a real heartfelt situation or attitude of mourning over the death of Saul, for the death of Saul and Jonathan. And again, Saul, someone who had sought to kill him. Further on in 2 Samuel, verse 18, and most of us are familiar with this situation where David's son wanted to depose him. In fact, drove him from office for a while. His son Absalom. And in verse 33 of 2 Samuel 18, it says, "And the king was much moved and went up to the chamber." This is after Absalom died and was killed in battle. "Went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And went on, and he said, 'O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would to God that I had died for you. Absalom, my son, my son.'" I don't think there's anything more painful, and I've not experienced it, but I've had some friends experience it, the death of a child. You know, both of my parents are deceased. My in-laws are deceased. We can deal with that a lot easier than the death of a child. Of course, my parents were... my dad was 95 and my mother was 94 when they died. So they lived long, good lives. And I think both my in-laws were probably in their 80s. So we can see here David, though, his mourning. And as we mourn sometimes, all the time, I'm sure, over the death of a family member. Found out yesterday, my cousin called me from New York and said that a cousin of ours in Detroit had just died. Frankly, I didn't know her that well. She was older than me, so she was, I think, probably close to 80. And I didn't have a great deal of feeling about it, but still when somebody dies, you do mourn at least a little. Maybe I mourn that I didn't get to know her better. We also mourn over family problems, and I know there's a lot of that going around. I know some of you probably can and have recounted family problems that come about when you... You know, when you become a member of the church, when you try to obey God in whatever way, it sometimes causes family problems. And we have family problems that go both ways. If you're a parent, you know about that. It says, "A foolish son is a grief to his father." And it also... the bitterness and bitterness to her that bare him. So that can be a horrible problem when one of your kids is bad, you know, is causing you problems, is not growing up the way you think they should. We have three children who fortunately grew up and live productive lives, you know, and have families of their own now. They have their problems still. I think many of you realize, if you're parents, that those problems don't go away when they turn 21. Sometimes they just get worse. They don't have little kid problems anymore. They have big problems. I remember we have two daughters, and one of them was a real, gave us a lot of trouble when she was in high school. She was hanging around with kids who were A students, were, I think many of them made the honor roll. They were from wonderful families, and they didn't get into little bitty trouble. They got into big trouble, and that bothered us a lot. In fact, Sharon and I thought at one point we ought to just run away from home. Sometimes as a parent, we'll run away from home, we'll go hide somewhere, we'll live another life for 10 years, come back and hope that everything works its way out. You know, that our kids are, well, we never did that, and now I guess we're happy we didn't. We're still not totally pleased with our kids, but of course they're probably not totally pleased with us either. Particularly Dad and his crazy religion. So our persons in our family can cause us problems, can cause us to mourn. Turn to Matthew 10 and verse 34. Matthew 10 and verse 34. And you probably, again, you probably can, we each have our own stories. You probably can tell stories that would put mine to shame, you know, when we have problems within the family. Matthew 10 and verse 34, Jesus Christ here says, "Think not that I come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Now, it's not that Jesus Christ is a troublemaker. It's just that when you get in line with him and you do things right, that causes family problems. It really comes from the other side, from the family. "For I am come to set a man at variance against his father." Some of you have experienced that. I experienced that, and I can remember it was a Friday night in 1963 when my wife and I had been living in Massachusetts, and we moved back to New York, and as young people often do, we moved in with my parents. My mom was delighted to have us. My dad was a little less happy. And Friday night came around, and we were not in the church yet, but we knew it was the Sabbath. And she got with my wife and said, "Let's get some laundry done." And Sharon said, "Well, we're not going to do that." And I kind of had to explain it, and I explained it to my dad. To make matters worse, I was looking for a job in a field where I had no experience, in a industry that operates 7 days a week. And so here I was, unemployed by choice and by design, looking for a job in a field where I had no experience, where they were probably, he thought, going to want me to be available 7 days a week. And he found out that there was one day when I wasn't going to be able to work. And Eastman Kodak was the big industry in our town at the time. And he said, "You know, you couldn't even go to Kodak with that attitude and get a job," even though most of the people there, I think, worked a five-day week. But that set us at variance. "And a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." A lot of mother-in-law jokes. Usually it's the guys that tell them. "And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." We have to make a distinction. We have to make sacrifices, and that's sad. That makes us sad. It's not happy when your parents want to disown you. "And he that loves daughter or son more than me is not worthy of me." So being a Christian often brings about family problems. Again, there are probably a lot of stories about that in this congregation. Although I look around, I see people who were, I think, brought up in the church and probably right now are at peace with their families because of that. Although, you know, maybe there are some other areas. But And others who do have problems once in a while, you never know where they're going to come from. I remember the first year, I think, we were keeping the Sabbath, living back in New York State, and were invited on a Saturday to the family clam bake. So there were a couple of reasons why that set us at variance with our family. I guess they got over it. They accepted us. But still, I think they thought we were a little weird. So we mourn about that. We mourn about the loss of a family member or a close friend. We mourn over problems in our family, because that happens when you're a Christian, when you're doing what Jesus Christ said is the right thing to do. We also, when we look at ourselves, as we did recently, hopefully, before Passover, we looked into that spiritual mirror, God's Word, and we probably, hopefully, saw some personal shortcomings. And I looked at myself, and I realized I had some personal shortcomings, one of which I don't think any of you know about. I don't want any of you to know about it. It's up here. Maybe someday I'll talk about it. But I realized that, you know, I had a bad attitude in some areas where I shouldn't. And so I mourned. And I, you know, sometimes people make New Year's resolutions. And this is, of course, the beginning of a new year, about a month or so ago. And we probably, hopefully, around Passover time, make certain resolutions, areas we're going to work on. And I figured three. One was the one I just talked about. The other was to be more open and honest with people. And sometimes I'm a little bit given to exaggerations. And sometimes it's just passing on a story that may not be true, but is interesting. So, and I'm trying to think what number three was. Oh, my wife challenges me sometimes on things in Scripture. And I usually say, well, I'll check that out. She reminded me that I rarely, if ever, get back to her on that stuff. So I'm working on that too, looking for the opportunity to prove what I believe in a very concise and a very sure manner. So again, personal shortcomings. David was, again, we'll look at David's example, was aware of his personal shortcomings. And of course, he had some. He was a man after God's own heart, mainly because he could repent. Mainly because he was willing to take responsibility for his shortcomings. And there's sort of his attitude is summarized in Psalm 51. I think most of us are familiar with that. This is the psalm that reflects his attitude after his sin with Bathsheba. You know, he committed adultery. And then to sort of cover his tracks, he had her husband killed. And, you know, that's pretty bad. And there are just a lot of, I sometimes think about the excuses, you know, that David could have used. Well, hey, I'm a normal guy, and this was one good-looking woman, you know. Can I? That's the way God created me. How many of you have ever heard that? You know, and I've heard it. Hey, come on, I had a teenage son. And I was a teenage son one time. You know, God made me that way. Well, he allowed us to be that way, but that doesn't mean we should make it an excuse. He also told us what to and what not to do with those urges. I was thinking during the sermonette, Mr. Duran was talking about God sees everything. And when I was a young man, when I was a kid, I remember going to the train station with my great-grandmother and my grandmother. And my great-grandmother lived in California, so she was taking the train home. I don't know why I was allowed to tag along. But we walked probably a half a mile or a mile, is quite a walk, to the train station. And I remember they were arguing with each other in a friendly way about who was going to die first. Because my grandmother was experiencing some poor health, and my great-grandmother was probably in her 80s. And then within a short period of time, both of them died. Just about the time I became a teenager, again, some of you know what teenage boys are like. You do a lot of stupid things. You think a lot of stupid thoughts. And the one thing that bothered me most about that was my great-grandmother and my grandmother are in heaven looking down on what I'm doing. and probably know what I'm thinking. Fortunately, now I know that's not the truth. I know that someday I'm going to be able to be with them in the resurrection and be able to, well, maybe not even have to explain that. I hope not. But I know they're not watching. So I feel, and I was pretty sure they went to heaven because they were two very religious women. My great-grandmother was married to a, well, I guess the term today would be playboy preacher, but a minister, a Lutheran minister who, I guess, fell from grace. And my grandmother was, of course, the daughter of that minister and the granddaughter of my great-grandmother's father, who was a well-thought-of, highly placed Lutheran minister in Germany. But anyway, so much for that. But our personal shortcomings. And David says here, "For I acknowledge my transgressions, my sin is ever before me." I acknowledge my transgressions. He was willing to own up to it. He was willing to feel bad about it. "For I acknowledge my transgressions, my sin is ever before me. Against you and you only have I sinned." He's praying to God here. "Done evil in your sight, that you might be justified when you speak and clear when you judge." So he was willing to admit he'd done something bad. He'd done something wrong. In verse 17, "The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit." Sometimes our spirit is broken, and we look at ourselves, again, in the mirror of God's law and say, "Phew, I shouldn't have done that." Or, "I should have done that." There are sins of commission and sins of omission, things that we don't do that we could. "A broken and a contrite heart, O God, thou wilt not despise." So we can mourn over our personal shortcomings. The Apostle Paul did this. I always found this as a kid when I was reading it a little bit difficult to understand, a little difficult to deal with and to figure out, well, who was the Apostle Paul? And, you know, you think of him, and he was a great leader in the early church. But turn to Romans 7, and we'll begin in verse 14. Here's the Apostle Paul, someone we all probably admire. "For I know that the law is spiritual, and I am carnal, sold under sin." Now this gets kind of confusing for me. "For that which I allow, or that which I do, I allow not. That which I do, that which I do not. What I hate, that do I. If then I do that which is, I would not, and consent to the law that it is good, now then it's no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me, for I know that in my flesh dwells no good thing. For to will is present in me, but to perform that which is good I find not. Not willing, or willing, but not able to do the right thing." So he was mourning his human state, you know, the way he was. "For the good that I would do, I do not. The evil which I would not, that I do." Again, you can see that for me that was kind of complicated and it's even hard to read. "Now, if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that when I would do good, evil is present with me." We never get away from it, do we? We always have evil. We always have it bombarding us from outside, and sometimes we find ourselves welcoming it. And in verse 24, he says, "Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death?" He was willing to admit, to mourn his personal shortcomings, to say, "Oh, wretched man that I am." So sometimes we mourn our personal shortcomings. We also hopefully mourn the world situation, problems in the world. Ezekiel 9 and verse 1. Ezekiel 9 and verse 1. Ezekiel 9:1, "He cried in my ear with a loud voice, saying, Cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, and every man with his destroying weapon in his hand." Now, I don't know if these were angelic beings or what. Behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which is toward the north, and every man a slaughtering weapon in his hand. One man among them was clothed with linen, and a writer's ink horn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar, and the glory of the Lord of Israel was gone up from the cherub where upon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called the man clothed with linen, with the writer's inkhorn by his side. And the Lord said to him, go in the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark on the foreheads of all the men that sigh and cry for the abominations that are done in the midst thereof. Now, we see a lot of sin around us. You know, we see it, you know, watch television, listen to the radio, look around. You can see people sinning all the time. You can see people today who are out working. They don't know about the Sabbath. You know, that's sad. Someday they will. And they'll be held accountable for that, for what they're going to do with that information. But we see that. We see all kinds of sexual misconduct. I'm just amazed at the number of celebrities particularly are on television. And, oh, yeah, so-and-so and so-and-so. They have three children. Oh, they never bothered to get married. You know, others who, I know one couple said, we're not going to get married till anybody can marry anyone they choose. Now, I think they're limited in their perspective on that, and my comeback would be, okay, let's take an example of a 34-year-old man. He's in love with his 13-year-old sister, who's pretty much in love with him. Should they be allowed to get married? Well, of course, most of these liberals would say, well, no, not that. And I would say, well, how liberal are you? You're putting restrictions on their sex life. You know, of course, if it's a man marrying a man, they can accept that, or a woman marrying a woman. But anyway, that's one excuse that kind of sickens me, just the overall statement that till anybody can marry anyone they want. And, of course, they don't really mean that. They have certain restrictions, certain areas they won't delve into. Verse 17, and let's make sure I didn't get lost here. Yeah, I did. But anyway, and he said, oh, where did I leave off? The other said in my hearing, go after them throughout the city and smite. Let not your eye spare. Slay utterly the old, the young, the maids, the children, the women, and go not near upon any man upon whom the mark is. The mark was put on people who were concerned, who weren't buying into what they saw around them. A man upon whom is the mark, being in my sanctuary. And they began with the ancient men that were before the house. I don't want to be in that group. You know, how upset are we with what we see around us? Or are we buying into it? Again, there's not anything we can do about it. We can police our own actions and our own thoughts as a result. And he said unto them, defile the house, fill the courts with the slain, go you forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. Again, this is an example in Ezekiel. And again, these were angelic beings perhaps that were doing this. But the point is that who are the bad guys here? The bad guys are the ones who just kind of roll with the flow. Allow everybody to do their own thing, and we do allow that. But do we sanction it? Do we sanction it way in the back of our minds? You know, I know some people who, well, they're conservative. They don't believe in abortion. Good for them. But gay marriage, you know, what's wrong with that? Well, I can show you several places in Scripture, and that we had this recent vote here in the city on whether or not we were going to extend certain rights to homosexuals and bisexuals and all this other stuff, and it passed. It actually, it was kind of confusing because a no vote meant yes, and a yes vote meant no. A no vote meant keep things the way they are, because city council had passed a vote or passed a measure to allow that. And yes vote meant do away with that law. And if you remember, it was a very close race. But I thought about some of the liberals in the city who probably, and I don't want to get political, but saying, well, they had to petition city council. They had to go through the legal petitioning process to actually allow that vote to be taken. And I thought, well, there are people who are going to say, they're going to let a bunch of these goober, redneck, homophobic people in this town make a decision on that? Well, they did. Of course, it was, again, a very close race and a very close vote, if you're familiar with that. But anyway, we see that going on around us. And where we're being asked to accept it, and I told some people I know who were very upset that the thing got thrown out, the ultimate extent of that could be, may not, maybe would not be. In fact, I said, let's find a homosexual and say, how did your life change when city council passed that ordinance? And I bet most of them was, oh, nothing changed at all. And now wait a couple weeks and say, now how has your life changed since that was defeated by the voters? And I'm pretty sure they would have said, if they were honest, that it hasn't changed at all. The thing I feared was what was going to happen in New Hampshire a few years ago. They passed the gay rights ordinance that would have clergymen be in violation of the law if they refused to perform a gay wedding. They didn't. It didn't pass, by the way. I mean, everything but that part of the thing passed. But I thought, I'm never going to New Hampshire. You know, because what could happen? I could be fined or imprisoned or whatever, if that be the case. But that's the extent, that's the carrying out to a ridiculous extent. But people wanted that. Some people did. So we see problems around us in the world, and sometimes we need to mourn that. Look at Psalms 119 and verse 53. Or Psalm 119 is the largest, longest book in the Bible, and deals basically with God's law. And in verse 53 of Psalm 119, horror hath taken hold of me because the wicked that forsake your law. Look at that word horror. Are you in horror when you see people forsaking God's law and doing what God says is not right? And there may be things that we, you know, kind of, it's not all that bad, you know, certain sexual sins are probably, you know, if a guy cheats on his wife, well, he shouldn't, but it's not like being a homosexual. Well, they're all lumped together. They're all the same thing. And one is no more acceptable than the other. 2 Peter 2 and verse 7, and deliver just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. Again, Lot, who lived in Sodom or Gomorrah, one or the other. For a righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed the righteous soul from day by day, with their unlawful deeds. So Lot was saved from destruction, but was obviously very upset about it, as it says here. Didn't buy into it. Romans 1, verse 28. Romans 1, 28, just a kind of a look at our day. Romans 1:28, even though they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness. How do we buy into that? You know, and some of these people that I mentioned earlier who quit because they didn't get rich, was that based on covetousness? Maliciousness. Full of envy, murder, debate. Some people just love to debate, love to argue about things. Deceit, malignity, whisperers. I think we had a sermon on that from Warren Ott a while back about grumbling, whisperers. You know, I did one on gossip. Backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covetous, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, knowing the judgment of God, that those which commit such things are worthy of death. Not only the same with those who have pleasure in them that do that. So we can see here again, do we mourn over problems of the world? Why do we need to mourn anyway? Well, for one thing, it's balance. You're not going to be happy-go-lucky. Everything shouldn't strike you as, oh, this is just wonderful. We need balance. There is a time for mourn. I usually quote a country song. I'll quote a rock song that was out several years ago based on Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3, beginning in verse 1. To everything there's a reason, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, time to gather stones, time to embrace, time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, a time to loose, a time to keep, a time to cast away, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Mourning is part of that balanced life. There is a time to mourn, as it says here. People who live carefree lives tend to lose control of them. Ecclesiastes 1, we can see this, the case of Solomon. Here was a man who had everything, including a lot of smarts. But in verse 16, it says, I commune with my heart, saying, lo, I am of great estate. I have gotten more wisdom than all those that came before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart and my great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I perceive that this is vexation of spirit. In much wisdom is much grief. There are some things I just don't want to know, and some things I don't need to know. But there are people who, you know, will heap things on you and cause you grief. He that increases knowledge increases sorrow. Again, there are things we need to know, but some things we don't need to know, and they'll just cause us grief. I know I anger some people once in a while when somebody says, well, you know, I got some dirt on somebody. Do you want to hear it? I say, no. Do I need to hear it? Well, no, but I thought you'd find it interesting. Nope, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Some things I just don't want to know. Ecclesiastes 2, again, talking about people with carefree lives. Again, look at Solomon, and look at, in this passage, look at how many times first person singular is used. Who's he talking about? In my heart I said, now I will prove you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, and this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it's mad. What does it do? I sought in my heart to give myself to wine and acquaint my heart with wisdom, to lay hold on folly till I might see what is good for the sons of men, that they should do under heaven all the days of my life. Here we go. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees of all kinds of fruits. I made pools of water, and therewith wood that brings forth trees. I got me servants and maid servants and maidens, had servants born in my house. I had great possessions and great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered also silver and gold, the peculiar treasure of kings. I got me men singers and women singers, you know, Showbiz, Branson, whatever, and delights of the son of men with musical instruments of all sorts. I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. And on it goes. I, me, me, me. In verse 17, he says, therefore, had everything he wanted, everything he could want. Therefore, I hated life because the work that is wrought unto the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, if you read the tabloids or even watch television casually, it just saddens me to see particularly very young people, particularly entertainers, some cases it's athletes, who accomplish a great deal, enjoy a great deal of success, and it seems, and I'm sure that's not true invariably, but Miley Cyrus, enough said. My little granddaughters loved Hannah Montana. That was her character on the Disney Channel, and sweet, I never watched it that much, but, you know, she had that reputation, and but then all of a sudden things got weird. Justin Bieber, I think I'm pronouncing that right. You hear his name, now, you know, he's in trouble all the time. And on it goes. And that's so sad that people would have so much and then just somehow have to go into a self-destructive mode. Again, Matthew, we turned here earlier. Matthew 5 and verse 4. Matthew 5, 4. Blessed are they that mourn, they shall be comforted. You know, you're going to see your family again. And at some point, we're all going to be together. We're all going to be able to enjoy each other's company and enjoy God's blessings and God's law, the way he sets things up in his kingdom. You know, we're going to see world affairs straightened out. You know, something done with ISIS, which is, I guess, the current bad guys in the world. And Boko Haram, the group that kidnapped 300 schoolgirls and apparently sold them into slavery in this day and age in Africa. That's so sad. But we shall be comforted. Those girls will be reunited with their family, possibly after the resurrection, eventually. Matthew 10 and verse 39. Matthew 10 and verse 39. He that finds his life shall lose it. You know, if we're just self-interested in, as one minister said, are you in the church just to save your skin? And I remember back in the 60s, I hate to rehearse these things because they weren't good, but it seemed like the goal of many church members, not all, but too many people, was making it to a place of safety, saving your skin. He that finds his life shall lose it. He that loses his life for my sake shall find it. Again, I've made this analogy. What if you went into a file in God's office, found a file with your name on it, in your job description, and you pulled it out and you opened up the file. This is for you people who remember paper. But opened up the file and it had your name and it said Christian Martyr. I don't want that job. But that may be your job description in the future. Christian martyr. But he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. Matthew 9 and verse 29. Matthew 9, 29. According to your faith be it unto you. Oh, Matthew 19. That was a good one, but it wasn't the one I was looking for. Matthew 19 and verse 29. Whew. Everyone that has forsaken houses or brethren or sisters, father or mother, or wife or children, or lands for my name's sake, those of you who have been alienated from your family, shall receive a hundredfold, and shall inherit everlasting life. And some of that happens in this life. You know, some of the people come to the feast alone because their family has been alienated because they did the right thing. And there's hundreds of people there that are just like family, closer than family. I tell people I've got a brother, my only sibling, and I dare say I know each and every individual in this room better than I know him. We get along fine. He lives between Florida and Montana, so we rarely get to see him. But I've got family in this room that's even closer than my own brother. Isaiah 25. And someday, you know, he's going to understand. Everyone's going to understand and have a chance, a first chance to please God and to be in his kingdom. And again, Isaiah, let's go to Isaiah 25, beginning in verse 6. And the mountain of the Lord shall And in this mountain the Lord of hosts shall make unto all people a feast of fat things, the lees of wine on the lees, of fat things full of marrow, of wines on the lees, well refined. And he will destroy in the mountain the face of the covering cast over all people. People will understand the veil that is spread over nations. And he will swallow up death in victory. The Lord will wipe away the tears off our faces. How many of us have grieved again over a lost loved one or whatever? And rebuke of his people shall he take away off all the earth. For the Lord has spoken it. Again, we can take comfort in that. Chapter 26, verse 1. In that day shall be a song sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. Salvation will God appoint for the walls and the bulwarks. Open the gates of that righteous nation and keep the truth, so the truth may keep the truth may enter in. I love this next verse. It was in a song that we sang when I was in chorale back in Philadelphia. Thou shalt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Do we trust in God? Is our mind stayed on God no matter what we see around us that we mourn that can distract us? In verse 4, trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. Verse 17, like a woman with child that draws near the time of delivery, is in pain and cries out in her pangs, so have you been in thy sight, O Lord. We have been the child. We have been in pain. Or we've been with child. We've been in pain. We have, as it were, brought forth wind. We have not wrought any deliverance in the earth. Neither have the inhabitants of the world fallen. But it's like a woman having a child. There's a lot of pain involved. My wife had three children. Back then, the father was not allowed in the delivery room, but time number three came. We went to a doctor here locally who allowed the father to be in the delivery room, and I'm glad men can't get pregnant. But you know, once that baby is born, it's just a wonderful thing. You know, to me, my whole life changed. My whole, all my priorities changed. Back then, I used to smoke. One day, I was having a cigarette. I was walking across the street in a little town in New York where I was doing a broadcast. And before that, I went over, had a cup of coffee, a donut, and lit a cigarette, walked across the street. And in the middle of the street, I threw down the cigarette, stepped on it, and I says, I don't want my son to ever see me do this. So it changes your life. But there's a lot of pain involved. Don't ask me, because I didn't have to. I just, you know, got to stand there and watch it. Another scripture that can is in Isaiah 2. Well, I won't turn there. I'm going to turn right to Isaiah 11, one of my favorite feast time scriptures. When you stop and think about it, it's so overwhelming. Of course, all of Isaiah 11 is pretty overwhelming, but Isaiah 11, verse 9, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Wow, I look forward to that. When that's going to be the norm. You know, waters covering the sea, the knowledge of the Lord, you know, everybody will know. It'll be just common knowledge. Revelation 20, again, talking about mourning and the fact that we are going to overcome. God is going to overcome. We're going to enjoy a life without mourning. And I saw the great white throne and him that sat on it. This is Revelation 20:11, whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. And the books were opened. Another book was opened, and the book, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of these things, which are written in the books, according to their works. Now, there are a lot of perspectives on what this is. Of course, traditionally, I used to think, well, yeah, he's opening the book. He's looking at so-and-so. Okay, you go to heaven. You go to hell. And, you know, stuff like that. Well, They're going to be given the opportunity to know what is in the book of life and to live accordingly and then be judged after that. The sea gave up her dead which were in it. The death and death and hell, or the grave, delivered the dead which were in them. And they were judged every man according to his works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. I don't want to go there. But things will be fixed. We can take comfort in that, in what God promises. Mourning is a normal part of a balanced Christian life. We mourn over, you know, loss of a loved one. We mourn over family problems. We mourn over personal shortcomings, problems in this world. The Christian life is not a carefree life. It does have mourning. That's part of the balance. But we can take comfort in the fact that God is preparing a better life for us and for everyone we love.